Chapter 35. Hate a woman? As a matter of fact, the idea of hating a woman was new to him. At that moment he hated Madame de S. But it was not exactly hate. It was more like the abhorrence that may be caused by a wooden or plaster figure of a repulsive kind. She moved no more than if she were such a figure. Even her eyes, whose unwinking stare plunged into his own, though shining, were lifeless, as though they were as artificial as her teeth. For the first time Razumov became aware of a faint perfume, but faint as it was it nauseated him exceedingly. Again Peter Ivanovich tapped him slightly on the shoulder. Thereupon he bowed, and was about to turn away, when he received the unexpected favor of a bony, inanimate hand extended to him, with the two words in hoarse French, au revoir. He bowed over the skeleton hand and left the room, escorted by the great man, who made him go out first. The voice from the sofa cried after them, "You remain here, Pierre, certainly, much here am I," but he left the room with Razumov, shutting the door behind him. The landing was prolonged into a bare corridor, right and left, desolate perspectives of white and gold decoration without a strip of carpet. The very light, pouring through a large window at the end, seemed moldy, and a solitary speck reposing on the balustrade of white marble the silk top hat of the great feminist asserted itself extremely, black and glossy in all that crude whiteness. Peter Ivanovich escorted the visitor without opening his lips. Even when they had reached the head of the stairs, Peter Ivanovich did not break the silence. Razumov's impulse to continue down the flight and out of the house without as much as a nod abandoned him suddenly. He stopped on the first step and leaned his back against the wall. Below him the great hall with its checkered floor of black and white seemed absurdly large, and like some public place, where a great power of resonance awaits the provocation of footfalls and voices. As if afraid of awakening the loud echoes of that empty house, Razumov adopted a low tone. "I really have no mind to turn into a dilettante spiritualist." Peter Ivanovich shook his head slightly, very serious. "Or spend my time in spiritual ecstasies, or sublime meditations upon the gospel of feminism," continued Razumov. "Made my way here for my share of action, most respected Peter Ivanovich. It was not the great European writer who attracted me, here, to this odious town of liberty. It was somebody much greater. It was the idea of the chief which attracted me. There are starving young men in Russia who believe in you, so much that it seems the only thing that keeps them alive in their misery. Think of that, Peter Ivanovich. No. But only think of that." The great man, thus entreated, perfectly motionless and silent, was the very image of patient, placid respectability. "Of course I don't speak of the people. They are brutes," added Razumov, in the same subdued but forcible tone. At this, a protesting murmur issued from the heroic fugitive's beard. A murmur of authority. "Say children. No. Brutes," Razumov insisted bluntly. "But they are sound, they are innocent," the great man pleaded in a whisper. "As far as that goes, a brute is sound enough." Razumov raised his voice at last. "And you can't deny the natural innocence of a brute. But what's the use of disputing about names? You just try to give these children the power and stature of men, and see what they will be like. You just give it to them and see. But never mind. I tell you, Peter Ivanovich, that half a dozen young men do not come together nowadays in a shabby student's room without your name being whispered. Not as a leader of thought, but as a center of revolutionary energies, the center of action. What else has drawn me near you, do you think? It is not what all the world knows of you, surely. It's precisely what the world at large does not know. I was irresistibly drawn, let us say impelled, yes, impelled, or, rather, compelled, driven, repented Razumov loudly, and ceased, as if startled by the hollow reverberation of the word driven along two bare corridors, and in the great empty hall. Peter Ivanovich did not seem startled in the least. The young man could not control a dry, uneasy laugh. The great revolutionist remained unmoved with an effect of commonplace, homely superiority. Curse him, said Razumov to himself. He is waiting behind his spectacles for me to give myself away. Then aloud, with a satanic enjoyment of the scorn prompting him to play with the greatness of the great man, ah, Peter Ivanovich, if you only knew the force which drew, no, which drove me towards you. The irresistible force. He did not feel any desire to laugh now. This time Peter Ivanovich moved his head sideways, knowingly, as much as to say, don't I? This expressive movement was almost imperceptible. Razumov went on in secret derision, all these days you have been trying to read me, Peter Ivanovich. That is natural. I have perceived it and I have been frank. Perhaps you may think I have not been very expansive. But with a man like you, it was not needed. It would have looked like an impertinence, perhaps. And besides, we Russians are prone to talk too much as a rule. I have always felt that. And yet, as a nation, we are dumb. I assure you that I am not likely to talk to you so much again, ha, ha. Razumov, still keeping on the lower step, came a little nearer to the great man. You have been condescending enough. I quite understood it was to lead me on. You must render me the justice that I have not tried to please. I have been impelled, compelled, or rather sent, let us say sent towards you for a work that no one but myself can do. You would call it a harmless delusion. A ridiculous delusion at which you don't even smile. It is absurd of me to talk like this, yet someday you shall remember these words, I hope. Enough of this. Here I stand before you confessed. But one thing more I must add to complete it. A mere blind tool I can never consent to be. Whatever acknowledgement Razumov was prepared for, he was not prepared to have both his hands seized in the great man's grasp. The swiftness of the movement was aggressive enough to startle. The burly feminist could not have been quicker at his purpose than to jerk Razumov treacherously upon the landing and bundle him behind one of the numerous closed doors nearby. This idea actually occurred to Razumov. His hands being released after a darkly eloquent squeeze, he smiled, with a beating heart, straight at the beard and the spectacles hiding that impenetrable man. He thought to himself, it stands confessed in his handwriting, I won't move from here till he either speaks or turns away. This is a duel. Many seconds passed without a sign or sound. Yes, yes, the great man said hurriedly, in subdued tones, as if the whole thing had been a stolen breathless interview. Exactly. Come to see us here in a few days. This must be gone into deeply, deeply, between you and me. Quite to the bottom. To the... dot dot, and, by the by, you must bring along Natalia Viktorovna, you know, the Alden girl. Dot dot dot, am I to take this as my first instruction from you? Inquired Razumov stiffly. Peter Ivanovich seemed perplexed by this new attitude. Ah. H'm. You are naturally the proper person, la person indiki. Everyone shall be wanted presently. Everyone. He bent down from the landing over Razumov, who had lowered his eyes. The moment of action approaches, he murmured. Razumov did not look up. He did not move till he heard the door of the drawing room close behind the greatest of feminists returning to his painted Egeria. Then he walked down slowly into the hall. The door stood open, and the shadow of the house was lying aslant over the greatest part of the terrace. While crossing it slowly, he lifted his hat and wiped his damp forehead, expelling his breath with force, to get rid of the last vestiges of the air he had been breathing inside. He looked at the palms of his hands and rubbed them gently against his thighs. He felt, bizarre as it may seem, as though another self, an independent sharer of his mind, had been able to view his whole person very distinctly indeed. His is curious, he thought. After a while he formulated his opinion of it in the mental ejaculation. Beastly. This disgust vanished before a marked uneasiness. His is an effect of nervous exhaustion, he reflected with weary sagacity. How am I to go on day after day, if I have no more power of resistance, moral resistance? He followed the path at the foot of the terrace. Oral resistance, moral resistance. He kept on repeating these words mentally. Moral endurance. Yes, that was the necessity of the situation. An immense longing to make his way out of these grounds, and to the other end of the town, of throwing himself on his bed, and going to sleep for hours, swept everything clean out of his mind for a moment. Is it possible that I am but a weak creature after all? He asked himself, in sudden alarm. H. What's that? He gave a start, as if awakened from a dream. He even swayed a little before recovering himself. Ah. You stole away from us quietly to walk about here, he said. The lady companion stood before him, but how she came there he had not the slightest idea. Her folded arms were closely cherishing the cat. I have been unconscious as I walked, it's a positive fact, said Razumov to himself in wonder. He raised his hat with marked civility. The sallow woman blushed duskily. As he had her invariably scared expression, as if somebody had just disclosed to her some terrible news. But she held her ground, Razumov noticed, without timidity. He is incredibly shabby, he thought. In the sunlight her black costume looked greenish, with here and there threadbare patches, where the stuff seemed decomposed by age into a velvety, black, furry state. Her very hair and eyebrows looked shabby. Razumov wondered whether she were 60 years old. Her figure, though, was young enough. He observed that she did not appear starved, but rather as if he had been fed on unwholesome scraps and leavings of plates. Razumov smiled amiably, and moved out of her way. She turned her head, to keep her scared eyes on him. I know what you have been told in there, she affirmed, without preliminaries. Her tone, in contrast with her manner, had an unexpectedly assured character which put Razumov at his ease. Do you? You must have heard all sorts of talk on many occasions in there. She varied her phrase, with the same incongruous effect of positiveness. I know to a certainty what you have been told to do. Really? Razumov shrugged his shoulders a little. He was about to pass on with a bow. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.